thanks once again for downloading and listening to a podcast from Celtic Underground. We are in the 21st year and the 20th season of the world's longest running football fans podcast. You can subscribe by going to thecelticunderground.substack.com and you will get correspondence, articles, emails straight to your inbox. You can pay a little bit of money and you will get exclusive content straight to your inbox. And if you go online and look on our website, you can still, you don't need to be on the Substack app, you can get all the podcasts on your usual provider. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying enjoy the latest podcast. Thanks once company, again for downloading and listening to our podcast from Celtic Underground. We are in the 21st year and the 20th season of the world's longest running football fans podcast. You can subscribe by going to thecelticunderground.substack.com and you will get correspondence, articles, emails straight to your inbox. You can pay a little bit of money and you will get exclusive content straight to your inbox. And if you go online and look on our website, you can still, you don't need to be on the Substack app, you can get all the podcasts on your usual provider. Anyway, enough of me. This is me, Harry Brady, saying enjoy the latest podcast. Misery loves company. That's what
the wise man said. I haven't got the legs for them to be playing Celtic football, trying to pass it through the thirds and such like. So he just had them playing a kind of reduced version of Hearts. They were trying to play Hearts, Hoof and Harry. And Hearts are much better at that, Hoof and Harry, than Celtic are. They played, I think, it's not been talked about a lot, and I understand it, this isn't a bash Martin, but the tactics were all, tactically, they were inept. I felt tactically inept. I mean, it's interesting, I saw a stat today, that's Callum McGregor's lowest pass completion rate, 63%. It's the lowest he's ever had in a Celtic shirt. You could see it.
First,
you can see it.
2 minutes. I'm not sure how much the ball actually touched the grass.
But yeah, there was this period where it was just headers, 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 and the two teams they couldn't find a man with their passes.
All I was looking for was for us, one of our players, to just take it down, pass it to Schmeichel. Everybody then gets in information and then play out. And actually, and get onto your. You know, we tried to play Hearts at the Hearts' own game. For that brief period, once we did get the ball down, there was only one team in it for 15 minutes of the first 15 minutes of the first half once the game got underway, because we were playing football. The ball was on the pitch.
And then it was these aimless punts forward. He'd said that Javan Chara, I hope I've got that right, he'd said this isn't a target man. And then we treated him like a target man.
Yeah.
And you could tell he was coming short, clever, maybe a bit too cute in terms of the way he was looking for the deft touches and just flick it around the corner and all that. But so you were trying to play a football that wasn't going to suit your one new signing. You never really gave him an opportunity. And with the glimpses we got of him, I thought he looked promising. His header off the bar, that was a really good effort. And then he made the goal. He made the goal with that 30-yard run, he just burned Halkett, and it was measured. He's across the face of the goal. See, when you watch that back, Maeda almost screwed up for Yang because the two of them almost get on each other's road.
There was
loads of that, people getting on each other's roads.
I thought, how'd you say it? Javan Chara.
Javan Chara. Yeah.
I thought he did okay, but I thought a lot of the time with them playing the ball up to him, I thought a lot of the time, because he's not, as Martin said, he's not a target man, I felt he was trying too much to, well, I'm not getting this, I'll just have a wee nudge on the defender.
Yeah, yeah.
So like first half ball kept going up and they kept fouling the guy and then, well, you fouled the guy. I thought he was trying too much of fouling.
Yeah, but was that not
fouling instead of just trying to do something with the ball?
Was that not a common theme across the team? It was almost like saying, yeah, we'll not be physically intimidated, so we'll foul you, you know, or we'll niggly fouls. You know, The timing was off. The timing in every aspect, even the timing in terms of if you're pressing your opponent, if you're trying to block up, like even Tanetke, he was only on for about 15 minutes, but he gave away, you know, but the three or four fouls. You're like, this was TV land, Celtic TV land on Sunday, was people shouting in their telly, "Don't fit." No, like, I know it wasn't Matt. It wasn't my living room.
Well, I tell you what, it was in my house for the heart second. Back post, fucking back post. Because that's what it was. You knew it's coming.
The sound, you knew it was the coming soundtrack for the first of the afternoon. Back post. Don't fit. No.
But so let's start with the game. Free kick from Negrin. Funnily enough, I was talking to someone just last week who was talking about the lack of goals that we scored direct from free kicks. And I was saying, yeah, but how few games do you actually see these days across many teams? Free kicks given away at the edge of the box. I mean, look at how neutered Tavernier has become. Rangers have not been getting these
apart from penalties,
he's still getting penalties. But Rangers have not been getting those free kicks at the edge of the box. In general, across football. I mean, I tend to just watch Celtic, however, in general across football. You're not watching Match of the Day or Sports Scene or whatever, or Sky Sports Saturday or whatever, and seeing these reams of free kicks at the edge of the box.
No, you're right, actually. You don't see so many free kick goals. I'll tell you, before the game started, and it was like, you know, when McInnes decided to opt for Gordon, I said to my boy, I said, I'm pleased about that, because he's passed it, and I think he mucked it up. Much as it was a good strike.
It was a great strike.
Yeah. But he should have stepped across his goal a yard, and then, because he wasn't even close to it.
And the thing is, see, if you look at his positioning, it wasn't like he was way, way, way over.
No, he wasn't. He was quite central.
And if you look where the ball went in, it didn't go right into the corner.
But he still was nowhere near it.
So his positioning, if you look before the free kick's taken, you would look at that positioning and go, that's quite good, because he's just off centre.
Yes.
So he can cover both sides quite well here. And then if you just looked at where the ball was hitting the back of the net, if you said at the beginning, based on his position, it's going to go there, you would say, keeper will get that.
And then you thought, this, because stupidly I thought, I could see Celtic, if they really turn it on, they could win 2-3-0 here. And then I don't know what happened to them. I do think they were blown out of their arses, really. And I know Maeda had one of those truly atrocious.
Well, he was absolutely awful.
People say he's checked out. I keep reading this online in the last couple of days. He's checked out. He didn't look as if he checked out in Bologna. I think he was blown out.
I think there's a couple of things that people keep forgetting. Remember, we sign him. Some people are great. Some people are not so sure. I remember him getting slaughtered virtually every game. Then he went away to the Asian equivalent of the Euros for Japan.
Yeah, was it the Asia Cup or whatever?
And he came back. And I remember people, I remember on this podcast, and I remember people online joking, did we get a different, you know, did they leave the old Maeda there and say there's a different one back? Because he was, I think, due to the nature of his technically not great.
No.
I think that leads to a lot of up and downness.
Yeah. If you look at Celtic's second goal, now it looks good. Length of the pitch, I think, scales to Maeda, is it? And he flicks it but he doesn't mean to flick it where it goes. It's just fortunate. I think Ross talks about this in his article that he published today. He said it was either fortunate or good play. But he flicked it and it didn't quite go where he wanted it to go, but it actually suited Jovan Chara. You know, like, it was perfect for him.
But we've been trying those. We were trying too many of those flicks. In fact, that's the reason why, my guess would be why Hitati's not playing. Because he's been, all he wants to do is just flicks, fancy flicks.
Or he likes to do the kind of half turn, the spin. Because remember early on against Bologna, that was the first chance they got, was because he'd been playing well up to that point, and then he tried one of those and he was dispossessed and they were breaking through. But there's something, you talk about, I was hoping Hatate would have played on Sunday, because I think it's been OTT about, I mean, I know it was stupid of him and such like, but my God, the pylons these days, they're absolutely merciless, aren't they?
Firstly, people who haven't even run a primary school football team are telling Martin O'Neill or Brendan Rodgers how they've made the wrong decision about something and they would do better, because of course it's dead easy to make decisions when you're not standing on the sidelines at the side of a pitch with thousands of people screaming at you, knowing that if you... So I do get frustrated about that concept of everybody's an expert these days.
Yeah.
And then that's what results in the pylons.
And there's another layer to that these days, you know, the kind of... the guys in the huddle board would call themselves the kind of... What is it? The stats shaggers or whatever they call themselves, isn't it? Like, people think, I can look at the analytics and I can tell you this guy will be A, B or C. Whereas it's a lot more nuanced than that.
Absolutely. I think I've mentioned it before, Ian Graham's book, How to Win the Premier League, he does quite a bit about that. And he does a brilliant thing about the people who say, oh, he's a dead cert, you should sign him, he's going to be great. And he's got, I should really do the sums, I think it's 6 criteria. And he said, so and it, I might have a player who in every one of my 6 criteria is 75%, but you do the calculations. 75% times 75% times 75% times 75% times 75% is 12%. It's like he does this thing where he takes the 75%, but if you do it across his, and so saying across 6 criteria, this guy's 75%. The normal person, when I say the normal person, I mean the non-statistician person, might look at that and go, well, he's 75% across everything. But his point is, multiply 75% by 75% 6 times, yeah, and you get to 12%. So the chance of it succeeding because of that very point of, you know, you've got a guy coming from a different time zone, a different culture, what you eat at different times of the day, different weather, adapting to a different country, all of these things have a material impact on players.
Is this not where they use the wagon wheel now? But you know, they show you how, they look at the different facets of their game, and it's how much they push towards the circumference of the circle.
Yeah, but even at that, that's just a fancy way. That's just
that's the 75%, but isn't it?
Yeah, look at that. It looks great. Look, it's a perfect circle. That's almost there. Yeah, but yeah, as I say, his point is you should really read his book.
I should read. I'll read it during the summer.
You should read his book because it's really good. It's also because the other thing that then, once you've read his book, gives you an insight into how managers can change, because he's at Liverpool when Brendan Rodgers arrives and he's quite critical of Brendan. And the Brendan who was at Celtic the second time was not behaving like that Brendan. So you can see how people will change due to, you know, like, so there's Brendan, first time round at Liverpool. He's been through the Chelsea Academy system and Reading and Watford very briefly and Swansea, and he's got Swansea up into the English Premiership, and then he gets a Liverpool job. So no doubt he's thinking he's the bee's knees if he was chocolate and eat himself. Because you would do. If you've had just this meteoric rise of success after success after success, you're going to think, no, I know my football stuff.
Yeah.
So you can imagine that Brendan then gets a bit of a knock, but then comes to Celtic. He's still, a wee bit's been taken off him, a wee bit of self-awareness.
I could tell that.
But would still be quite, I'm the bee's knees. And then when he left Celtic, he goes to Leicester, and again, we'd probably be thinking, no, I'm definitely the bee's knees. And then the same thing at Leicester. And you could see how that people will change, because setbacks will make them a bit more, what is it, you learn far more in adverse circumstances than if I was rosy.
Yeah, losing and winning and all that, aren't they? They say about managers or even
players. So one, that book's really good for that. Two, that book's really good for reading it and actually a large chunk of what he describes the system at Liverpool is pretty much what we've got at Celtic. And then the final thing is he's now away and he's set up his own. I think he's one of the main advisors to Scout-tastic, which is the software that Celtic use for.
Do you know,
analytics.
I've got an agent friend, but and he was saying last week, and he deals with some big clients. He's got some big clients. He says, the only club in British football where I speak to a CEO, Celtic. You know, I mean, I'm not making excuses for Michael Nicholson or whatever, but the CEO at Celtic clearly is not like any other CEO. That's, therein lies the problem. Therein lies Celtic's inability as well.
You might be, and I'm not saying he is, but you might be a very good CEO in all these facets. And then for 2 months in the summer and 1 month in the winter, you're supposed to be
a director of football.
Aye, a negotiator. That's why I've been banging on that I think Celtic should have a director of football for ages. But of course, you've got to be a director of football because we had a head of football operations, which is the sort of job title below director of football, but principally it's the same type of role. And, he was the former Exeter manager, and that was about the peak of his expertise.
But it's the lack of autonomy in the sense of saying there's a football department. Football people run the football department. The suits run everything at Celtic, ultimately. Dermot Desmond wants to be, he kind of wants to be in the room. And Peter Lowell loved being in the room. He loved that.
Somebody said to me that
wheeling and dealing.
Brendan really wanted a director of football. And it was Dermot that didn't. Because Dermot didn't want somebody between the manager and him.
I think that's, if anything comes out of this season, because I don't think, whatever people, this, that the club's been fattened up to sell it. Nice. I don't buy that. Boom, boom. I don't buy it. Like nobody's going to buy it. But if anything might come out of this, Dermot Desmond, I know he's intransigence, he's fabled intransigence, but well, he might, could, if there's anything good to come of this horrendous kind of, it's been a joyless 7 months, hasn't it? Utterly joyless. A club board warring with the modernity and the governance structures that a football club, like a 21st century football club, should be, processes they should be operating with. A fan base warring with their board of directors, fan base almost warring with itself at times. Like a board warring with a fan base. We saw at the AGM, it's like, I almost think to myself, and I'm trying to stave this off because I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be that person. But I'm thinking, you know, what I want more than anything else for this season now is just for it to end. I remember feeling like this but I was right to feel that in the COVID season, especially going to the games, which was hellish, as I've always said. It was miserable, and I was every Celtic game. It was utterly miserable. But I was right to think that there. I'm not right to think that now, because by this time in the COVID season, they were 17 points behind. There was nothing happening. Like, this is not gone. But I'm almost having to try and convince myself of that it could all work out.
But do you want me to give you some hope?
I need hope.
Right, okay. 23 games, somebody sent this to me, and I don't know where they've got it from, whether they made it up themselves or whether this is circulating somewhere that I've not looked online, been out all day. 23 games played, 3 teams, 7 managers. Hearts under Derek McInnes. 23 games, and he's dropped 18 points. So on average, he's dropped 0.78 points per game. Okay? Rangers, Russell Martin. 8 games, 13 points dropped. So on average, he dropped 1.62 points per game. Smith, 1 game, 2 points, dropped 2 points per game because he only played 1.
Yeah.
Danny Rowe, 14 games, 7 points dropped. Average points dropped a game, 0.4 points a game.
Yep.
Celtic, Brendan Rodgers, 9 games, 10 points dropped. Average 1.1 points a game. Nancy, 6 games, 12 points dropped, average 2 points dropped a game. the Blessed Martin. 8 games, 2 points dropped, 0.25 points dropped per game. Okay?
Yeah. Yep.
So,
yep.
15 games to go. If each manager continues on the same average points drop per game and all that, the league will be... I'll do it in reverse order.
Yeah. Drum roll!
Hearts, 84 points. Rangers, 84 points. And the champions by 2 points, Celtic on 86. There you go.
It is quite incredible.
Celtic, we don't need to play the games. Let's just call the season and use that data.
Yeah. The other thing that I was saying to my boy as well, like, there's 39% of the league games remaining. I worked it out last night. So you've got 39% of the football, the league football is still to be played. Can you really see this? Mind you, I remember, and I read it, I was reading it again today, when Celtic, they lost to Rangers at Ibrox. In fact, I took it down because it tickled me. They lost, if you think about 07-08, they lost to Rangers at Ibrox, and then they lost at home to a 10-man Motherwell. They were squealing, the crowd were squealing Scott McDonald to get hooked. He'd a nightmare that day. When he... No, they were squealing because he was hooked, sorry, because he was bringing Samaras on. Obviously, Samaras was less than popular then. And that's the chant went up round Celtic Park, Strachan, get to fuck. And that the match report for that in the BBC, which I looked up earlier, it was like Celtic left 6 points behind Rangers, right? Having played 2 games more.
Was that 07-08 you said?
07-08. So this is the match report on the BBC website for that game. Celtic's hopes of retaining the SPL title were all but extinguished as they crashed to defeat against a 10-man Motherwell.
Was that Firth Park?
No, it was Celtic Park.
Was it Celtic Park?
So they had 7 games left after that. They had to be faultless. And it wasn't always plain sailing, but they won those 7 games, including 2 of them against Rangers, famously. So
one of the things I remember about that was after that Motherwell game, because I'm trying to remember where I was, but the thing I remember is I had tonsillitis for the first time I was off work. Last time I was off work for more than a day or any time. And wasn't feeling great. And I came across, remember that Will I Am thing, Yes We Can, of the Barack Obama?
Yeah. Yeah.
Stuck that on our site. I said, I don't know why, but I think we're going to win every game between now and the end of the season and we'll win the league. Put that on the site. And we did.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, I think Celtic won that league title. I'm not being churlish, but Rangers' exertions just caught up with them. I remember, and we don't need to rehearse that, but I know they got extensions of the season and all that. We don't need to go over that ground again. But when it was happening, he was very good. He was very good with the Sundays Watersmith. And I said to him, you know, there's a lot of people say that Celtic only lost the title in 2003 because they went all the way to the UEFA Cup final. And he turned to me and he says, yeah, and I'm one of them. He says, that's, I fully believe they would have won that title if they hadn't gone all the way to the final.
You know how we lost it by a goal? I always remember Mark Haley was asked, and obviously he deep down felt that was the issue, but couldn't bring himself to say it at the time he was a pundit. And he said, yes, I think Seville had an impact. I think Rangers would still have won the league, but it might have been closer.
That's good. Can you get half a goal?
So yeah. I actually think...
All is not lost, but, no. You know...
I actually think the most important thing was we didn't lose to Hearts. Now, so if we talk about the game, getting back to the game, which we started 26 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Negrin's free kick. Then there was... I see that all the criticism that Schmeichel's had this season, and a lot of it's, you know, to do with his distribution has been spot on, and the goal he conceded against Rangers, he sort of flopped down, get that. But I actually think Schmeichel has, in a number of games, pulled off some incredible saves that have kept us in the game. And he did it again on Sunday.
And he did it last Thursday in Bologna.
Yeah, I mean, that guy, it was a clear goal scoring opportunity and the guy didn't score it.
You know, the one thing half. I would say, mind you, and I see nobody's really picked up on it, but I thought we should have kept out Hart's first goal. Comes at his back post and it's right in his little corner that he's defending.
Yeah. I thought my only concern in the first half was Hart's kept playing this long diagonal to the back post when they were attacking from left to right, and it was going across over Kieran Tierney's head. And the guy, Harry Milne, is it?
Yeah.
Kept coming in at the back post. And I was just a bit concerned about how Tierney kept getting under the ball for this. And then their first corner kick they get, back post. Engels loses the guy that he's... We're part zonal, part man marking. Engels loses the guy, I think it was Finlay that he was on, who comes round to the back post. And I think Engels, Schmeichel and Tierney, the three of them together, should have done better.
Yeah, because he was right on his line. You know, he elected not to come out, fair enough. He's right on his line, and it was just, there was the little corner of his goal line that he had to protect between the post and himself, and that's where the ball went in. But as you say, I think I would forgive him that, because whatever his form issues a month ago or so, I think he's come through them.
I think the whole team was just not buying into anything that Nancy was talking about. They had just no confidence in him. No confidence in what he was telling them to do. And so that then makes them themselves have no confidence. It was just feeding everything through.
I see, has he been appointed just before I come on? Was looking at St Etienne.
Oh, I just saw that St Etienne were interested. I don't know if he's actually been appointed.
They're in the second tier.
Yeah. Second goal, back post. It was just so.
You knew it was coming.
Yeah. I'm looking through to see if there's an 18 thing. I think it was just more that they were interested. It was just really, really frustrating that it comes to the back post and he just knocks it back across and rifled it in. And of course, the other thing that we need to touch on is Celtic going down to 10 men.
They played so badly, I don't know how significant. I think it was significant in the sense of, I think it was going to go to, you can never say, but I could have seen it going 2-2. Regardless of whether Celtic had 10 or 11 men. But once it gone 2-2, I could have also seen Celtic conjuring something up to make it, you know, to win the game. Whereas they were either losing the game or holding on for the draw once they were down to 10 men. It's the psychology of that. It's been quite a start. I still don't see how, do you know what it reminded me of? Do you remember Neil Beaton's red card in the COVID season, talking of it? It was for last man at Ibrox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was practically on the halfway line. I think it was a foul on Morelos. He's practically on the halfway line over at the touchline. And somehow this was an obvious goal scoring opportunity. It was astonishing.
See, my issue is, I can see if he'd have given the red card. One of my issues is, if you give him the red card, I don't think there was enough evidence for VAR to overturn. It was one of those ones, not enough evidence for VAR to overturn the red. So because the referee's got a really good view and it's pretty simplistic what's happening. So I don't see that there was enough evidence for the referee for a yellow to be overturned to a red in the same way. It's not in a straight line with two guys in a straight heat. And as Dermot Gallagher said, it's not like the Hearts player had the ball under control.
No.
It's a diagonal ball that's going away. The Hearts player needs... This is why, for me, it's not an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, which is one of the things that it's got to be. The Hearts player has got to get to the ball, get it under control, and get a shot away, and he's shooting against Schmeichel from about 30 yards out. If he decides not to shoot from 30 yards out, he's then having to then run diagonally back towards goal because he's run way out wide. He'd have picked the ball up level with outside the line of the post, of the far post. He'd have picked the ball up if he got to it.
Yeah, I think it was right almost on the point of the 18 yard. I saw someone had asked for the trajectory.
Yeah.
So the point of the 18 yard line outside the box.
And from 30.
Maybe about 20, 22 yards out. But it seemed to be that people decided, oh yeah, it was a red card because he would have reached the ball first. That was the only criteria they said.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he would have got to the ball first. And?
Yeah.
So if, so you, if one, you're on the ball, oh, you've got an obvious goal scoring opportunity.
He's got a turn in, and if he shoots from that angle, I think it was Alan Morris, the huddle board, Alan Morris, and the huddle board put it, like, if he shot from where they're expecting him to get it, the XG would have been...
It's like, 0.08, wasn't it?
It was less 08. Than one.
Yeah, it was 0.08.
I'll put it this way, he then made the point that the save that Schmeichel did make had a higher, had a double XG than this chance would have had.
Yeah, yeah, probably much more than double XG.
Yeah, people shooting, just shooting from judge. Outside the box at a wide angle, so the chances are Schmeichel would have saved it. Secondly, if he decides not to shoot from 30 yards, he's going to be running in towards goal, which everybody's looking at where Murray and Scales were. Surely if the tackle's not made, Trusty's still there.
But Trusty takes himself out of the equation because he's committed infringement.
Yeah, but the whole point
that's
is...
That's how you're judging the infringement.
If the infringement had not been made, by making the infringement, has he stopped an obvious goal-scoring opportunity? I.e., take the infringement out.
But if you take the infringement out, then the play just carries on. As soon as you have the infringement, that player is no longer active. The player committing infringement is no longer active.
Right. Well, but then he starts to then turn and cut back towards the goal.
Yeah. They measured
by,
it.
By which point, was it Murray that was wide? Yeah, Murray's then running in a diagonal.
Aye. They were saying that Kabori was he was 7 yards away from the ball and Murray was 14 yards away from the ball. But Murray wasn't going towards the ball. He was going to defend his goal. Like, yeah. You know?
So my point about where Schmeichel is, one, he's quite wide to shoot and Schmeichel's a wee bit out off his... Nobody's also then calculating Mike Schmeichel had gone to... He wouldn't have done, but... Schmeichel would have probably taken his position round about the edge of the six-yard box to slightly narrow the angle at that point, ready to backtrack in. The guy's then, if Murray comes across, he's conscious of Murray coming. He will be conscious of Murray coming across. And then it's this thing. How good is that Hearts player at getting the ball under control when he's running at full pace?
Good at buying fouls. Hearts are schooled in that. That's where they are. I'm declaring them champions already at buying fouls.
But all of those things, that's why, you know, you and I like our cricket, the umpire's call principle. That was a perfect umpire's call.
It was a perfect umpire's call.
If he'd given a red, there's not enough to overturn it to downgrade it to a yellow. If he'd given a yellow, there's not enough to upgrade it to a red. Because I would like to see, when McLean came over and looked at that on the telly, what additional information did he see that he didn't see on the pitch?
I know, he just panicked because... I bet you, and I'm not buying any conspiracy or anything like that, but what I am buying is, I think he's a weak referee, Steve McLean. He doesn't even really believe in himself. I don't think, you can almost see it in his face, and he's thinking to himself, sugar, I should have probably sent off, and I think he should have sent off Trusty in the cup semi-final for the flick of Butland's face. I think he probably should have, and he's thinking, shit. So it was nothing to do with the incident or whatever. He just thought, bollocks, if they're telling me in the VAR room, you know, you might want to have a rethink with this. I'll have this rethink because I don't want this for a week that I've twice allowed Austin Trusty to get away with red card offences. They're human. Referees are human.
Absolutely.
And that's I think that was what the telling thing was. It wasn't what he was watching. He didn't see anything different. It was because other people told him, yeah, I don't think you've got this one right.
And he also, can you imagine, well, put it this way, after that cup final, it was over 2 weeks of daily coverage about it, perpetuated by Rangers, making sure that it stayed in the news, you know, and they won it, you know, because how many positive decisions have they had since that?
Yeah, it's worked. It's definitely worked, and they've definitely got into his head. That cup semi-final and the aftermath and the whole Trusty should have been red carded, that got in his head. Although, Beaton allowed him because he asked him to come over, the VAR team asked him to come over. And I notice if you look at all the ex-referees and Hackett, Alakar, the three of them all said, wasn't a red card. It was one of those ones where officials, former officials, there was even the guys up here, Stephen Conroy and whatever up here, they were saying, should never have gone to VAR. Or VAR should never have got involved. Involved. Sorry. No, that everything
that
goes to VAR.
That, for me, is the issue. That's re-refereeing the game. VAR getting involved in that is re-refereeing the game. That you are not looking at that and saying, that
is... It's subjective. It's always subjective. Therefore, VAR are not supposed to get involved in the subjective.
Yeah, because that is just, I'd have refereed that slightly differently. Well, good for you.
Yes. And you could get 10 referees. It's like, you know, it's like the lawyers. You know, you want 10 different opinions, get 10 different lawyers. Because there's no absolutes in this. So they should have gone with McLean's on-field decision.
Umpire's call.
Umpire's call, yeah. Look, umpire's call annoys me sometimes, but people don't want to hear this like in their podcast.
No, no, really there's a few... Me. Why?
It really does annoy me. Because it's the full ball, but it's like, you know, your full ball has to be in the silhouette of the wicket, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. For an umpire's call not to be umpire's call, but it's like, it's just, you know, it's half a ball across but, the...
But what I like about it is stumps, because the principle about it is they want to use the technology to reinforce the on-field decisions of the umpire. They're actually wanting to say the guy on the pitch is the guy that we want to be the main decision maker. So unless there's a clear and obvious error, i.e. it's the whole ball, we're not overturning the guy who's made the decision. The guy on the pitch should have the respect to the players because they know he's the decision maker. Whereas what football's done is football has diminished the authority of the guy on the pitch because everybody knows that marginal calls, they can just get somebody else to make that decision. It's allowed, it's weakened referees by allowing them to abdicate, particularly linesmen. You see it with linesmen all the time. Don't need to make a marginal call. TV will tell me whether it's right or wrong.
But for exactly the same incident in terms of how far the ball is, like in comparison to the stumps or to the... you can have... It's out at one time and it's not out another time because it's umpire's call. But it's the balls. The ball's going to hit the same part of the stumps.
Well, that's
on
because,
the two instances.
Because it's about reinforcing the decision of the guy on the pitch.
No,
so that's where football in this occasion should have been saying, Adam, maybe not, but this is what I thought was supposed to happen in those situations. Beating his thinking, I'd have given a red. Because the guy is one of the guys is wearing a hooped jersey and the other one's not. I'm just like, right, so beating saying, I'd have given a red.
Yeah. And he's rasher. He's rasher than McLean.
Yeah. He's but rasher. What's my understanding of what's supposed to happen is, God, what's McLean's first name?
Stephen.
Yeah. My brother was friendly with a Stephen McLean like 50 years ago. So just me. Stephen, what did you see there? See if he then describes pretty much what Beaton's seen. My understanding is that Beaton shouldn't then be overturning it. Because Beaton's not going to be presenting him with new evidence. What have you seen? Well, I've seen the ball's come through. It's a diagonal. It's going slightly away from the ball. Trusty's getting slightly outpaced. There's a bit of a coming together of the legs. Because again, that's the thing that I think, it wasn't an obvious foul by Trusty. It was the Hearts player runs across in front of Trusty. And it's the, when I looked at it again, it's more or less the guy, I mean, it's not intentional, but more or less it's the guy's foot hits Trusty's knee more than anything else. So there's a coming together of the legs. Hearts player goes down. Murray's coming round on the left. Scales on the right. The ball's a good 5 to 10 yards away from the Hearts player. He's not got it under control. He's still 30 yards from goal. Consequently, it's not a goal-scoring opportunity. Yellow card. If I'm beaten, my understanding of what VAR should be doing in those situations is the factual parts McLean has described correctly. The interpretation then of... Consequently, the factual position that I've seen, consequently, I don't interpret that as a red. I interpret it as a yellow. VAR shouldn't be getting, because then it's being re-refed by VAR. Because if McLean then says, I have seen, and it's pretty much what, give or take, what the TV has seen, what Beaton has seen, then the factual position is the same. So there's nothing that I'm going to show him in the telly that's any different. Apart from, the only thing is then you're saying, I think you were too quick making that decision. I think you've given yourself time to think about it. I think you were too rash. And I think it's a red. Well, that's not the purpose of VAR.
No. 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 Definitely not. And I just can't get away from the fact that people are saying that was an obvious goal scoring opportunity when the guy is 7 yards from the ball. No, it's not that the ball just got knocked. I saw somebody saying, yeah, but sometimes players like to knock the ball forward, away from 7 yards. Well, apart from Dyson, my head. So many other.
That's
players.
Just his first touch.
I don't know. What was that one the other week? He had a few almost like that, and it was like, but the shoddy passing, the slipshod passing for Celtic was astonishing.
See, the other thing somebody said to me at the end of the game, it's a disgrace that we finish with that defence with Murray and Ralston at left back. And I then went through and said, right, okay. So if you then take into consideration the sending off and Tierney picking up an injury, the following players who would all start ahead of the people who finished, Granacci, Tierney, Carter Vickers, Trusty, Johnson. Those five were missing. It's firstly, our first choice and our second choice left backs were missing. Our third choice left back is Scales to play there in the event that those two are missing. Well, because of the sending off, Scales is kept. So effectively, we are, to be fair, we are, you know, and there's a terrible indictment on the signing strategy of the club. Well, yes, there is bad signing strategy. But to be fair to the club, we are then having to enact a fourth or fifth choice left back. Because our first choice is injured, Tierney. Saracchi's currently got a hamstring injury, so he's out. So that's two players for every position is considered the standard of what you operate in.
Yeah, I remember Brendan Rodgers saying to us that, and well, one of the last things Ronnie Dyer, when we were asking, what do you think it went wrong? He said, there are too many players. They stockpiled players, if you remember, at the end of the Dyer era, because the players weren't quite good enough, a lot of them, although most of those players were turned out to be invincible treble players, let's be honest about it. But then when he come in, Roger said the first thing he said was, I need to pare this squad down. I need to pare this squad down. Your perfect number is 25, which is two players
per position.
Three keepers.
Yeah, pretty much. Three strikers, three keepers, and two players for every other position. So taking that into account, I don't think it's massively unreasonable. And okay, you could argue, well, that's why you should have brought in X. But, you know, then for the right back, we actually have brought somebody in. So we've actually got Alistair Johnson, he's out, who brought in Araujo. I tell you what, if we could get in the next week, even just three players of the standard of Araujo.
Yeah. Yeah, even if they are only loans, God, you would hope, well, it will be. I'd imagine you're saying it looks like it's...
Well, so let's go into the transfer window. So the challenge we've got in the transfer window is the January window, you know, the January window is a hard window. I mean, there's very few clubs do loads of business, and people might turn around and say, oh, look at Club X or Club Y. Well, see the quality of the players. So January, look at... I'm not defending the club. I'm just, actually, I've said this a few times to the podcast. January is a hard window, which is the reason why you shouldn't be putting yourself in a position where you have to sign three or four key players in January. You know, January is a hard window. Now, we've signed, ironically, it's funny how we you know, I mentioned to someone today, I said, oh, if things go really well, we might bring in three players. Oh, we need more than three. We've already brought in two. If we get another three, and if the concept is that all five of those players are first-team players, we have brought in half a team in the January window if we get three more players in.
Yeah.
It's a big if. It's a big if.
If. And...
Yeah. But the loan...
Doesn't necessarily look one of those as a defensive midfielder, but which I think they're kind of crying out for.
Yeah, well, the loan aspect of it, I get, we've got... Martin O'Neill is a temporary manager, so it's a bit, you don't want to blow your budget on a temporary manager.
But they were in profit in the summer.
I know, but the point...
Where is the budget?
Yeah, but you've still got to have... Well, put it this way. You don't want to spend £7 million on a striker and then go and spend another £7, £8 million on a striker and you've suddenly spent £16 million and you play one of them. There's got to be an element of... I know we're sitting here with £70 million in the bank, which it won't be because of everything that's gone on so far this season, but you've got to have a bit of rationalisation about it. For me, bringing in loan players is reasonable because it gives you the option, particularly if you manage to get a loan with an option to buy. It just allows you to get players in that suit Martin, and you're not then turning around to... You're giving as much as you can. I mean, everybody goes on about Ange's first window because, as you quite often point out, because he was given carte blanche because the squad had been decimated prior to his arrival. So he was given this carte blanche.
Yeah, I know the problem, and I know they hate the bloating, and this squad is bloated. But you've done the piece yourself before about how there'll be natural kind of wastage come next summer.
But you're right.
Do you remember? But do you remember it's even different? And I know the circumstances were different. But do you remember they tried to give Mowbray every opportunity to turn it around? He brought in four players. A guy who had gone out to play in the World Cup final, Robbie Keane, who was like Edison Braffied, wasn't it? Like he brought in. And Rasmussen spent some money on him. Like they really did back him to try and turn it around. Whereas there doesn't seem to be, it's almost as if, I don't think they're deliberately sabotaging the season, but maybe they're risk-averse ways. Sometimes you do need to chase it. Sometimes you need to chase it. And this is one of those occasions where you need to chase it.
So this is the dilemma I've got. On the one hand, brought in a striker, we brought in a right-back. Right-back of quality, decent striker by the looks of it. If we bring in another three, and if we manage to do that in the next week, we're recording this, and I think it closes next Monday at 11 o'clock at night, the transfer window in Scotland. And if we manage to get in another three at the end of that window, you're looking at it going, five players, and particularly if they're reasonable quality players. And so I'm waiting, thinking, well, I can't slaughter them for not bringing players in because there's still a week to go. And particularly if we're going after quality, quality's going to have options that's at least of the same standard of Celtic and not better. The issue is, my evidence as to whether that will come true is looking at the summer window and the previous January window where we had to make a statement in the half-year reports about how the previous January window was a poor window and we didn't want it to be a poor window. Although we did sign Jota.
Do you remember who made that statement? He was the guy that was controlling everything, and everything's changed since he got ran out of town, isn't it? Peter Lovell, first window without Peter Lovell. Remember they used to say that all that, like with Ange's window. Yeah, and we kept saying to them, nothing will change. Yeah. Nothing will change.
Do you know, I read online, you know, after the red card, for once our club need to grow a set and make a stand against the SFA about this, right? And then we've appealed the red card today. Finally, they've got to do something. Suppose they've got to do something, right? Finally, they've done it. I mean, I'm thinking, but I know the rest of the other clubs used to say that the SPFL stood for St. Peter fucking Lawwell, because every other club in Scotland perceived that Peter ran the whole thing. Like, literally, what's-his-face Doncaster did whatever Peter said.
The unseen Fenian hand.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they genuinely, like, one of the things that people, remember first time we failed in the Champions League qualifiers and we were playing on a Thursday. And we had a lot of home games following it because Peter had asked for us to play home games following European games so that we weren't playing away from home, right? But the problem with that was the games were being moved to a Sunday because we failed to make the Champions League and nobody was turning up at the games.
Oh, yeah.
So Peter then tells Doncaster that he doesn't want us playing European games if we're in the Europa League at home, because we'll be playing on the Sunday anyway for TV if we're away from home. So he'd prefer us to be playing the games. And at that point, when we were the only show in town, Doncaster then does that. If you look back on the records, Doncaster did that. That we then started. And then people are moaning, oh, we're always away from home.
Yeah.
Because half of you buggers didn't bother, you know, in the Ronnie Dyla period, half of you buggers didn't turn up when the game was moved to a Sunday. And we had like 30,000 people, 25,000 people at Celtic Park for some of the games.
Yeah.
On that thing of we don't do anything, well, try telling that to the 41 other clubs who, as I say, SPFL, St. Peter fucking Lawwell. That's what they called it.
Yeah, I mean, they've had their doogie-doogie stuff. Mm-hmm. Pushed it all the way, remember?
Remember John Reid's famous comment? About, more or less, we're not going to take it anymore. Mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore.
We're not going to be sitting in the back of the bus anymore or something, wasn't it?
Yeah. If you Rangers fans think that the reason we've gone 60-odd games with a red card is just because they think we've done a brilliant job behind the scenes of making referees frightened of us. Everybody sees things through their own prism, but I certainly don't think you can say that we've never done stuff before. But anyway, so what's your expectation for the window?
If they got two players, I would think that'll probably be a bit. Maybe I'm placing too much import in what Martin O'Neill said after the game, and they're saying, "Oh, he's still looking for three or four." He said, "Oh, I don't know about the number, but we're looking to strengthen." And that's been taken in the cyber world to mean we're either not getting anybody, or it's going to be a couple of players.
Yeah, I took that as he didn't want to be a hostage to fortune to a specific number.
Yeah,
because I don't things know. Can change.
Can you really reshape it? Like, even if they got three quality players, or would it make all? I mean, I do think. Never mind signing three quality players. I know it happens. But you're no telling me that if you had any Alistair Johnson, Cameron Carter-Vickers and Jota in that team right now, you would be feeling a lot. You'd be feeling a lot more.
If we just not had Nancy for however many games he was there at.
Yeah, I was hearing.
If you think about it, we're 6 points behind Hearts, right? So we don't lose to Dundee United and we don't lose to Motherwell. Say we win those two games. There's the 6 points. More likely, if O'Neill stays, worst case scenario, we draw with Hearts at Celtic Park. But we'd have probably beaten them. If we'd have beaten them, there's your 6 points in one game. Because 3 points off them and 3 points on us. Even if we'd beaten Hearts and drawn with Rangers. If we'd have just kept Martin and not had Nancy, we would be... I would be surprised if we weren't 6 points clear. In the league.
I don't know, it's all...
Not necessarily playing attractive, playing well, because as we've seen, you know, Falkirk
was
not...
What happened to... You know, when you think about the attacking football, like, because it looked as if that team had no guile or no artistry or no invention in Sunday, that Celtic team, and you think, but they showed under Nancy, I know they showed a lot of other flaws, but they showed under Nancy, they could play some right, sharp, right.
Yeah, but the problem with that
football.
Was because what we did was we had 9 of the 11 players on the pitch doing that. And we left one centre-half and one goalkeeper. And that's why we lost games. That's why we lost 2 goals to Livingston. We lost to Dundee United when we were slaughtering them. Nearly lost to Aberdeen when we were slaughtering them.
But there must be a hybrid. There should be a hybrid. I mean, the damning stat, the ultimate damning stat that's been pushed out since Sunday. It's yesterday, God, it feels like a lot longer ago now even. Look, Rangers, Hearts and Rangers games. 2 points Celtic have played. 2 points out of a possible 15. Hearts, 3 different managers, 3 different styles. None of them have been able to beat Hearts. I mean, rudimentary Hearts.
On the other hand, Celtic played 60 minutes of European football with 10 men. On Thursday night, we then played against Hearts with Tierney got injured and went off. Trusty got sent off, and Hearts couldn't beat us.
Yeah.
They want to call themselves champions. They want to call themselves champions. Celtic came to town having played 60 minutes on Thursday night of a hard European game, and lots of teams don't win after a European game when they're on the road the following game. We went to Tynecastle. And obviously we're playing with 10 men whenever Negrin's on the pitch. And in terms of the midfield, because he's absent, apart from he scores goals every 175 minutes, I looked at. And he's absent the rest of the time.
I see he's got as many league goals as the amazing, fabulous, fantastic Lauren Shankland, best striker in the country. So I kind of, whatever this guy is, Negrin, I kind of like it. So he can match the best striker in the country. And the other thing is, my boy says his XG's higher because... he doesn't take penalties.
Well, there you go. See? So in all of that, Hearts didn't win. Hearts didn't win.
I know. But I'll tell you, I am already having kittens about Falkirk on Sunday. Sorry, but that's where...
We're at home. We're at home to Falkirk. We'll win. We'll score at least 3, but we'll get on to that. We've got Utrecht on the...
Yeah.
Thursday.
You know,
night.
And I'm hating myself as well because I'm thinking all the way down the line, you don't write off Europe. And I'm thinking to myself, as Ross said, Celtic, if they get through on Thursday, and I think they will actually. I mean, Utrecht have just lost their 4th consecutive game. They're 11th in the Dutch league. So if they've got they'll probably be saying, this is a write off for us. We've got to get ourselves stabilised in the league. So they they won't even necessarily play a particularly strong team. They've only got 1 point, they're joint bottom of the Europa League table. I mean, surely God, Celtic will get through, but then that gives you, as Ross was saying, I think in the next month then Celtic would have 9 games, Rangers 7 and Hearts 6.
Yeah, that's why you've got to sign 3 players minimum in the next.
But will they? Do you think they will? There, that's a $64,000 question. Or the £77 million question.
Firstly, I think we'll get past Utrecht. Secondly, I'll go for 2.
Yeah, that's what I saw they were saying about, when's Sarachi coming back? Even honest to God, even if you'd Inaccio and Sarachi, and you know, even I'm not even talking Cameron Carter-Vickers, Jota thing. I mean, I'm talking the next level. Even if you kept some of these guys fit, I still say Iheanacho hadn't been injured in the cup final, I'm sure they would have won that, even with Nancy and all that.
Just quickly looking to see.
I thought he was going to be on the bench on Sunday, but he's obviously not quite there yet.
I'm just looking to see if there's any Celtic rumours that I can see on Twitter. No, I think it'll be 2. I think it'll be 2. I think we'll beat Utrecht, and I think it'll be 2 players that'll come in. I hope it's 3, maybe even 4, but I think it'll be 2. Taking into account we've already got 2, so we'll see. Utrecht's crisis deepens before Celtic clashes and battle manager defies calls to step down.
You want to get through. You do want to get through.
I'm the same always. I want Celtic to win every single game they play.
Yeah, yeah.
Deal with the consequences after. You never know. Get the 3 signings in. Martin O'Neill goes on a run. We win the title in time for the UEFA Cup for Europa League final.
Or the quarter final even. Settle for it. But what kind of nick will he come back in anyway? If you'd Sarachi, I saw there was chat. Greg Taylor, did you see that one?
No. Remember that someone did the analysis that I know close to in Brendan's first year back. We are linked with 96 players, only 4 of which were actually real that we were linked to.
So that's just
most of the stuff is agents promoting their player.
Yeah. So, anyway. You know, you never give it up. You never give it up. And as I say, 39% to go. You think about it, Rangers. I remember that Saturday night. It was like that Motherwell night. I remember it. And as I say, everybody thought Rangers would go to Tannadice the next day. And then they would move 9 points ahead with a game in hand. We Celtic only had 7 games left. And what happened? They fought out a 3-3 draw. It was a madcap game up at Tannadice. Celtic went to, I think they went to Motherwell, bizarrely. I think they were playing then at Fir Park the next week. Won that. And it all slid into place. And they weren't a good side. They weren't necessarily a particularly good side then, Celtic. Sometimes that is the O'Neill factor. If anything's going to drag Celtic through, it's that force of personality. You know, I was arguing with somebody on Twitter the other week about Celtic have always been a badly run club. Always. And I was saying they were a badly run club in 67. What was their chairman then? He was a guy who 2 years before he was going into the dressing room and telling the manager, no, you can't play him. You play this guy. He made him rip up his entire starting 11 for a cup. I think it was a cup semi-final that they lost to Clyde. He destroyed that. He's just so happened. He was still the chairman with Celtic, were the champions of Europe. He wasn't a good chairman.
Yeah.
He's a better chairman standing up for them, waving the tricolour and not having to play behind Iron Curtain for some. But they weren't a well-run club. He was the guy that kept them. He'd kept them back. He'd kept them in the dark ages. I saw somebody on Radio 4 today saying you don't use the dark ages anymore. It's no PC. I missed that next bit because my kettle was boiling, I think. You know where that happens, you know? Should have wound it back. You know, like, there is modernity. I'm the Celtic board. I don't live in the modern world, you know?
But I thought the principle of the dark ages was it was a period when there was very little literature, so it's in the dark. We don't really know what it really...
I always thought it was just because they were using candles and all that.
No, I thought it related to the we went a bit backwards.
But I suppose it could be. But and maybe so, think, you know, it's the, is it the white
century, board? Because basically it was the fall, and I'm just reading it, because it was basically the fall of the Roman Empire. And so with the Romans gone, people weren't like keeping track of what was going on in the world. And so the information's limited. So we were being kept in the dark.
Right. I thought you meant in terms of the Romans, in terms of all the innovations that they, once their empire.
You know, they have modern technology, and the first thing that happened when they end is that that retreats back, and people don't really want to, you know, Luddite-type principle. Obviously, Luddites actually came years, decades later.
Yeah.
But that principle of, let's get rid of this technology because it's Roman.
Yeah, of course.
Anyway, we should get Matthew on since he's the history guy.
I know. Well, yeah, I think I feel better than I did. I know.
Yeah, well, that
7 minutes ago. So thank you, Brian.
Well, Sinachi comes back in from injury, right? And Iheanacho comes back, and we sign another striker, another centre half, and another
right winger, is it?
And a right winger, right? So see, we managed to do that. Suddenly, we've got three strikers,
and none of them are Johnny Kenny. God bless him.
Yeah. Well, he's back to the position he should be, fourth, fifth choice. Maeda then gets to play left, wide left, where he should be. Tanecki is back up. We've got a right winger with Yang is back up. Suddenly we've got a right-footed centre-half. So we've got trusty Scales, right-footed centre-half. Araujo on the right. Alistair Johnson coming back. Sinachi backing up Tierney or vice versa. That squad suddenly makes you feel a lot more comfortable. What it makes you feel comfortable about is that if the manager needs to make a change, he's not going vroomph down a massive level. That's what it makes you feel comfortable about. If suddenly you get Johnson back, say Carter Vickers is back for the last, you know, for the split games. Say Carter Vickers is back for the split. Johnson's back.
I think Johnson was back before that, but he was still saying that he didn't expect to see Jota or Cameron Carter Vickers, I think he was saying the other day.
Right, we'll say those two are out. But yeah. We get a centre-half. Just the principle of then going into, we'd still have Hearts at Tynecastle, at Celtic Park, Rangers at Celtic, after the split, we'll have Rangers and Hearts at Celtic Park.
Yeah. The next month, these games next month.
In the split, two of those teams that we'll be up against have to come to Celtic Park. We've got them at Celtic Park. That's why getting in, two players.
Let's look at it.
People started coming back fit.
I know, let's look at it the other way, right? I've given you 07-08, but my boy could hardly believe it. I said, you know, Celtic lost a league, been 5 points ahead with three games to play. 5 points ahead with three games to play. They lost a league and they just won at Ibrox. Sorry, my battery was going to run out there, so I had to move the... I'm crouching down here, you know.
Right, well, so we'll finish it so you're not doing it as if you're sitting down.
I know. Well, thankfully, you can only see me from the shoulders up. Well, no, it's no Angela Rippon here. I've just got a pair of tights on, you know.
Anything goes these days.
We are the
Andrew.
70s. What's that?
Anything goes these days. It's all right.
You better believe
it. We won't criticise you. Right, well, with that, I will say thanks a lot.
Thank you.
In your smile. We hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along soon. Please share the joy of Celtic Underground. Rate us wherever you can find us on your podcast provision, and also subscribe to thecelticunderground.substack.com. As you'll be aware, there are two types of subscription. There's free subscription, where you get a certain amount of content delivered directly to your email address. And then there's a paid-for subscription, where you get even more content delivered directly to your email address as and when it comes out. Anyway, enough of me. We hope you enjoyed the podcast. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying good night and God bless. Good night. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears.
Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.